Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Bat Flips and Maple Dips. My name's Clayton Croker, coming to you from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, obviously. Justin Anderson, also coming to you from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. He's like 2 feet away from me. Joining us via the Skype machine, we've got Patrick Marsh in the Maritimes. You all recovered from Hurricane Dorian there, bud?
Yep. Yeah, I'm feeling better than I was earlier today. Came a little down with something, but it's been raining for most of the week, but it's nice and cool, and I like that.
Did they get the crane off the street yet?
Last time I was by that area, it was still blocked off, but jeez. I mean, they gotta cut it into pieces to get rid of it.
That's crazy.
It's bananas. I'm surprised no one made a parody account for the crane. Just there's a lot of jokes to be made, especially about like flaccid.
Go on. Your first thought of the jokes is the old flaccid jokes, eh?
Yeah. That's what my mind goes to.
By the way, today's episode is brought to you by Sask Milk because they gave us a bunch of ice cream sandwiches to give away for radio promotion stuff, and they gave us way too many. So we have like 300 ice cream sandwiches in the freezer at work. I'm having one right now, so it's delightful. Shout out to Sask Milk. Why not? We're talking a little bit about the Jays today. We'll talk a little bit about the playoff race coming up as well. We're going to give a little bit of a spotlight to two Jays guys that really deserve it as well, because we kind of went away from doing who's hot, who's not, because it was honestly just depressing.
Who's not?
Man, it was basically just who's not, no one's hot. But a couple guys are getting back on that hot list. We'll go over it for a little bit. First, though, some Jays news here. Tim Mayza missing the 2020 season with Tommy John sucks for him. I mean, the Tommy John surgery is like the ACL surgery in football. You know, that's the big one. That's the one that really you've really got to battle back from. Justin, do you see Tim Mayza making a full recovery, though, and pitching for the Jays again?
The guy's 27, so he's not super old. He's a lefty. He's got value. I mean, the way the surgery has come since its inception is that it's advanced a lot. Like, yes, the recovery time is lots, but lots of times you'll see these guys like Ryan Barucki who have surgery like during their senior year of high school or during their college years, and then they make a full recovery and they go on to have long, successful careers. With the older guys, it's a little bit tougher, but I don't see Tim Mayza being too happy by this. It's going to be a long window of recovery for him. Hopefully he can be ready in time for 2021. That'll be the year the Jays are going to need him probably to be a contending team, and we'll need him in the bullpen. So hopefully he can make that full recovery.
Patrick, you have a little bit more insight on this Mayza injury, hey?
I don't know if I have a little more insight. I just don't know if I'm as optimistic as Justin is about Mayza, his recovery, and his value when it comes to the Jays. It's not that I want to see him not succeed. It's just that, man, he's missing the rest of this year and all of 2020, and there's not exactly a precise timetable for a 2021 return yet. Obviously, it would be great. I was a big fan of what Tim was doing last year. This year, he has struggled, mostly because I think he's been asked to do more than what he was capable of, but that's kind of a theme that we see in the bullpen this season. I thought he was older than what he actually is. I thought he was like 29, 30, and then I thought, well, this is definitely going to hurt his career. I don't know. I talked to Justin about it a little bit, and I'm a little less worried than what I was before, but Justin said it himself. Relievers are a dime a dozen. So if he recovers, great. If he doesn't, there's going to be, 11 other players to fill his spot. So, I mean, here's hoping that he recovers.
That's the thing that sucks about professional sports, is that one guy's injury is another guy's opportunity. And the guy who takes that opportunity, you always kind of feel bad about it because you're like, man, like, usually you bond with the guy who's in front of you. Like, especially in football, hockey, baseball, too. You bond with that person who's ahead of you on the depth chart because you're always at practice with them. You're always taking ground balls with them, fly balls with them. And then when they get hurt, you're like, oh, yeah, now is my chance to shine. But also, it's like...
It's bittersweet, right?
You know, it's just such a bittersweet kind of thing. Me, personally, I think Tim Mesa is going to have a cup of coffee with a couple other teams and then probably pitch with the Winnipeg Goldeyes or something like that
right
later on
in
his career. Get off in the old independent leagues and ride off into the sunset. But, I mean, he's had, what, 3 or 4 big league seasons? He's made millions of dollars. Good on him. Good on him. Kevan Biggio hitting for the cycle. More on him a little bit later, but third Blue Jay in franchise history to hit for the cycle.
And as I might have been a rash when Danny noted on Twitter, the first two guys used a double that they stretched into a single on their last their last hits to get the cycles. His was actually, he had a triple to get his. And yeah, so his was actually really a true cycle, not just something that guys were like, oh, I'm just going to stop at first base and take the cycle.
It's weird that the cycle doesn't happen more often.
It's just the triple is the hardest one. Mm-hmm. Because you got to hit it just in the right spot.
But like three guys in Blue Jay history have hit for the cycle. I think that's real low. But then I started to look at other teams and how many cycles they have. And it's not that many either. Like, it doesn't happen too often. I used to think, okay, the cycle, whatever. Got four hits. That's a great day. But it's tough to get four different hits in one game.
And when you think that there's nine guys that bat at minimum every game, right? Mm-hmm. And there's 162 games per team per year. That's a lot of at bats that... A lot of games, a lot of opportunities, and it just doesn't happen very often.
Hey, guys, do you want to hear a really interesting and weird stat when it comes to the cycle in MLB?
I don't think Justin has ever said no to a weird stat in his life, so of course.
No comment.
What?
Yeah, I'd love to.
So what would you guys guess is the record for most cycles hit by a single player in their career?
Four.
I'm going to go two.
You are both wrong. The answer is three. It was done by four different players, the latest of which was Adrian Beltre, who is definitely going to get into the Hall of Fame ASAP. And actually, I have two more things to throw at you with regards to the cycle. The first one is, how many players do you think have hit for the cycle in both the National and American League?
Like in total?
Yeah.
Total players or total cycles?
No. Like total number of players who have hit for the cycle in both the National and American.
Oh.
I'm going to say none.
Two.
The answer is three. John Olerud is one of them.
Hey, Johnny
O.
So is Bob Watson and Michael Kadire.
Hmm.
And the last little piece of trivia with regards to the cycle, because we're never going to talk about this again. how many family pairs have hit for the cycle?
Okay.
It's two now. That one's two.
I'll give you a hint. Craig and Kevan Biggio makes it at least one.
I'm going to say one.
It's two.
It might be Griffey
and
his dad.
It's two.
You're both wrong. Damn. The correct answer is three.
There
are three family pairs have hit for the cycle. Gary and Daryl Ward, father and son. Father and son, Craig and Kevan Biggio. And grandfather and grandson, Gus and David Bell.
Huh. David Bell's grandpa played in the big leagues? That's cool.
I know. That's weird, isn't it?
The more you know.
Yeah, so that's kind
of... How do you guys like stats? I'm
How
sorry.
How do you not like
just,
stats?
Oh, my God.
How can you not be romantic about stats?
It's pretty
easy. I've got one more cycle. One
oh,
more.
Boy.
Okay, one more.
You said two, and you've got, I think it was like six now.
Yeah, you might hit for the cycle when it comes to cycle trivia.
How many cycles have been hit in MLB postseason history?
Is it three?
If it's three, I'm fucking leaving. If it's three, I'm leaving.
Nope, just one, and it was Brock Holt last year against the New York Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
Game three of the ALDS.
I remember that now. Yeah, okay.
I know, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
One of the most overrated players, Brock Holt.
Brock.
I remember when he came up, everyone was so obsessed with him because
remember
his name,
when he sang the Halo theme song in the shower?
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of cool.
Hey, hold on. I know I said that was the last one, but there's one more.
I'm so
one more.
Mad right
How
now?
Many cycles have been hit in the entire history of MLB? What's your best guess?
I'd say 78.
57.
You're both wrong. The correct answer is 330. Oh.
Okay.
More threes. Great. Awesome.
Three. Yeah, that's why I wanted to do that one. We will never talk about the cycle like that ever again as long as the show is going. I'm sorry.
Don't make promises you can't keep, Patrick.
Yeah, that was... Oh. More Jay stuff here. Gritch Daddy. He's had 6 home runs this month, 4 in the past 7 games. Classic Gritch, just turning it on right when he needs to.
Up to 29 home runs now.
Everyone's questioning him. Oh, can Grichuk be the guy? Can he live up to his contract? And then he just goes on a tear at the end of the year when nothing matters. And it's like, oh yeah, we got to keep this guy. He's killing it. When is Randall Grichuk going to put together a full season? Is it going to be next year, guys? Like, Patrick, do you, like,
always next year.
Like, can you deal with the Randall Grichuk roller coaster? Do you enjoy it? Do you hate it? Or
actually, I'm not surprised whatsoever. And the reason why is if you go all the way back to March and we were talking about expectations for Randall Grichuk, we all agreed that him hitting 240, 30 home runs and 80 RBI would be perfectly acceptable from Randall Grichuk. He is almost on par with those exact numbers. So this is not a surprise. Although I will say Grichuk is kind of like the Alex Smith of baseball garbage time. He's getting in those stats right at the last minute to make it seem like it mattered, but it does not matter.
I love that comparison, by the way. That's good.
I don't know his actual defensive stats because, again, don't really care. But he has looked pretty good in the outfield.
Yeah, the thing, Randall Grichuk has the same issue for me as Kevin Pillar, where he makes catches, but he makes catches on the balls that he gets to, right?
But he makes the catch.
Yeah.
Again, I hate this conversation. Well, he doesn't take the right path to the ball. Well, does he get to the ball?
Not yes. All the time. He catches the balls he gets to, which isn't all of them. He has a negative defensive rating, but that's all I'm going to say. I won't bore you.
Thank you. Thank
just,
you very
that's
much.
That's just for you, Clayton.
But again, it's just the way that it looks like he plays defense.
He made a nice catch yesterday.
Again, on paper, it's like, oh, okay, well, he's got the negative defensive whatever. But just watching the actual game and watching him play defense, he looks like a natural out
there. Yeah, I just want to – I know Patrick and I were talking about this too with Grichuk. We kind of thought if we could get 30 home runs out of him and have him hit around 240 with about 80 RBIs, we'd be doing well this season.
If he could do that every year.
Yeah, he's in 234 with 29 homers and 72 RBIs. So he's kind of right along the lines of where we thought he'd be. So yeah, good for us getting that one right.
Again, he's never been an average guy. He's always been a streaky kind of power hitter. Yeah. And man,
he's been an average guy overall. Yeah. His player value. But yeah, he's not a negative player. He's not a positive player. He's just kind of there.
For what we're paying him and for the fact that we have him for 4 more years after this year.
4 more years.
I'll take that.
4 more
I'll
years.
Totally take that because we're not like grossly overpaying Randall Grichuk.
No.
He's got a pretty good contract, which I think is good for him. And if we want to trade him, it's a good trade piece as well.
$10 million a year.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It's a baseball deal.
Exactly. Let's talk about the future because that's the best thing going for us.
Yeah.
Nate Pearson's the 10th best prospect in baseball right now.
Yeah.
Which is, man, he just shot up those rankings.
Yeah, it helps when guys ahead of you, like Bo Bichette, graduate prospect status too. That's what happens at the end of the year. Those guys that are at the top five or so, they usually move up into the big leagues in September and they play out there at bats. And yeah, good for him. It's great to have another top 10 prospect and third best pitcher in the minor league systems. So it's good stuff.
Patrick, I'll ask you this. If Nate Pearson keeps getting better and keeps pitching the way that he has been, do we expect to see him next year, not just during the September call-ups, but even before?
No, we'll see him in the September call-ups. There's no reason to rush him. He's coming off of a major injury, if I'm not mistaken. And as great as he had in a season in the minors, he needs to be built up with regards to his innings. That's why he was shut down immediately when the AAA season was over. There's no reason to rush his developments because we just don't have enough pitching. And why would we bother burning a year of eligibility? Or I guess maybe it would end up getting burned next year, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily. It would depend how much he would pitch in the next season and that kind of thing too, right? His clock would start when they call him up, but it's all about total time on roster, active roster.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think he'll be a September call-up, maybe an August call-up. I don't know. Maybe they don't care about eligibility or time constraints, but there's no reason to rush him. He needs to log as many innings as possible while he develops.
Yeah, he pitched 101 and two-thirds innings this year. So He needs to be somewhere around that 160 mark in the big league season, probably. Hopefully over a full course of the season, maybe closer to 200 if he can make 30 starts. So, I think if we do see him, like you said, Patrick, I agree, it'll be in September next year. The Jays will try and build him up to be able to pitch 130, 140 innings over the full season next year. And then in 2021, they'll turn him loose and let him do whatever the hell he wants.
I just don't want to wait, though.
I know, it sucks, right? But with him, he missed, in 2018, he threw 1 2/3 innings, right? Because he got hit in the forearm with that line drive and broke that bone. So he didn't pitch at all in 2018. He threw some Arizona fall ball, I guess, in 2018. But it'd be nice to see him have another. He had a full healthy season this year. It'd be nice to see him do that again next year. Because this was really the first full year of Nate Pearson that we got to see his potential. And boy, did he ever show it off. So it's going to be another one of those things where Jays fans will have to be a little bit more patient with this one, just because it's not like a Vladdy or a Bo or a Biggio where they were holding them back for service time reasons for a lot of the time. Of course, with Bo, he did get hurt too. But this will be more of a workload management thing, a load management, a Kawhi Leonard term.
Let's say the Jays are in it halfway through the season, not just in the wild card, but we're going for the division. And we're playing real good baseball. Our youngsters are killing it, but we're having pitching problems.
You might
and
see
our rotation isn't good. Would you call them up then?
Yeah.
Like 2 months into the season, I'm saying.
I would. If
Patrick?
The Jays are in the race, why not?
I mean, if we're in the race 2 months into the season, that's way too early to be making that kind of call. I say no matter what, maintain the firm line that he needs to increase his inning count. And there's no reason for him to do it in MLB because otherwise they'll have to go through the same kind of pains that Trent Thornton went through. And we obviously learn from experience that's not the best way to develop a player. So I say, no matter what happens next year, don't call him up until late in the season. Even if we are having a problem with pitching, let's trade some of our shortstop prospects to get some pitching help. We have enough of them. They can't all play shortstop. So it's going to be a real crowded infield. At some point, we got to figure out whether or not Groshans is going to move to third, move to first, move to second, whatever. Kevin Smith, he had a pretty good minor league season. All these guys can't all crowd at shortstop. They can't all be on the field at the same time, at the same position. So trade them, get some pitching help if we're in that kind of, you know, if we're competing next year, I don't see why we don't do that and pull the trigger, because obviously that means the window is open for us to compete.
One thing before we get to the playoff race that Justin wanted to talk about, again, it's fun watching the kids play, but we haven't really seen a lot from Alfred, and we haven't really seen a lot from Teoscar Hernandez.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of Teoscar, but we haven't got a lot out of him. And Alfred has three hits and 12 at-bats this season. So
more Alfred, less Teoscar.
Less Teoscar, less Derek Fisher. Maybe less Randall Grichuk down the stretch, too, so we can let these kids play. We'll see what happens there. If Randall Grichuk was playing poorly, we'd see less of him.
But you can't sit him.
Yeah, you can't sit when he's on a tear.
No, you can't sit him.
So, yeah, but, I mean, they got to find a way to get these guys in the lineup. I know they have, like, 8 outfielders on their roster right now, so you can only put 3 of them in a game unless somebody else is going to play a different position. But, I mean, I get it, but at the same time, it's like, why do we keep starting the same 3 guys in Fisher, Teo, and Grichuk when we could be sitting Fisher and putting Alfred in instead?
They're on the roster. Like, there's no reason not to. It just seems weird that Alfred's
September.
Not getting that playing
time. Normally we think they'd let these kids play in September, but they are not.
Especially in the position we are. Maybe they just don't want to hit that 100 loss mark. Maybe it's just a pride kind of thing.
I think we have to win 4 of our last like 12 games to not hit the 100 loss mark. I think they're at 90 losses right now.
It's pretty tough for 91. Us to do, man.
91 losses. Yeah.
I mean, that's very doable for the Jays to reach that 100 loss
it's
mark.
It's doable. We could go 4-12.
Very doable for this team.
4-8, sorry. Or 4-9, whatever it is.
We're not good at math, whatever.
3-9, yeah.
2-17, whatever.
That's 12, right?
Yeah, sure. I don't care. Whatever. Just throw some random numbers. Let's talk about the playoff race, shall we? Playoffs. When it comes to the Central Division, because again, the East done in the American League, the Twins and the Indians almost done as well. Are you calling this one, Patrick? Like, are you saying that the Twins have the division right now, or do you think Cleveland can still creep up and get it?
It's possible, but the Twins have a much easier schedule. If you look at both teams' final 11 games, the Twins have 1 against the White Sox, 4 against the Royals, 2 in Detroit against the Tigers, and then 3 in Kansas City against the Royals. that's a cupcake schedule. They should be able to roll through most of those games with some W's. The Indians have to play the Tigers twice, the Phillies three times, the White Sox three times in Chicago, and then three against the Nationals on the road. Both the Phillies and the Nationals absolutely have to win every game possible. We'll talk about them a little bit later in the show, but the Indians have the tougher schedule.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call it, but it's getting pretty close. The Indians are running out of runway.
I just want to throw one thing out here. Isn't it weird that the Indians are finishing with an interleague series in a National League park? They have to, have their pitcher bat in that series,
too.
That's kind of a weird way to finish a season, right?
Yeah, I was doing some research on that, and it didn't make a lot of sense when I was looking up all the teams and who they had to play going down the stretch. It's really confusing.
That's really weird that they would finish like that. I mean, normally you finish off against a division rival. Like you've got the Twins playing the Royals. You would think they'd almost move that White Sox series for the Indians to the end of the season. But yeah, I didn't notice that when I was looking through the sheet this afternoon. But that's a strange way to end a year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good luck to them.
In the National League, again, only one division really has a race, but it's a good one. In the Central, the Cards, the Brewers, and the Cubs. The Cards lead the Brewers and the Cubs both by two games. We kind of wrote the Brewers off.
Brewers won't die.
We kind of were just like, oh, fuck the Brewers. Brewers are, they're playing good baseball. Sometimes when that happens, though, when like a star guy goes down and everyone's like, oh, it's over. Everyone else just rallies and is like, we got to do it. Not just for us, but they do it for the star player because they know Yelich wants to be in there so, so badly. They're probably dedicating the rest of the season to Yelich. Mm-hmm. And then the Cubs are just kind of sitting there, too. Like, who takes this division, Justin?
Man, I'm going to go with the Cardinals at this point. They've looked pretty good over the last little while. I mean, they're 5-5 in their last 10, which Patrick will be quick to note, but they do have the lead right now, so it's theirs to lose. And they have good pitching staff.
Who's taking this division?
Jesus, I have no idea, to be honest with you. It could be any of them. Although I wouldn't bet against the Brewers. It's almost like they're spitefully fighting for their lives and they're doing a really good job. If you look at everybody's schedules, they all have 11 games left. The Cardinals had to play the Nationals once, which was today, which ended with a St. Louis win, which is really bad for the Nationals. Then they have to play the Cubs on the road for four, and then they have to play the Diamondbacks on the road for three, and then they play three at home against the Cubs in the finals. There are seven games between the Cubs and Cardinals in their final 11 games. I very strongly recommend that everybody watch every single one of those games because they are going to be equal or if not more intense than playoff games because every single one of those games is a must win for both teams. And that's just going to make for some great baseball.
I say that the Cubbies are going to beat up on the Cards. I think the Cubbies are going to just turn it on for playoff season. The Cubs are such a veteran team, and like if they can get to the playoffs, they're going to be a dangerous team. I think the Cubs are going to beat up on the Cardinals. Milwaukee is going to kind of stay the course and get the wild card. I don't know. I think St. Louis might miss the playoffs in general.
It's a bold strategy.
Can you imagine if St. like because their schedule is pretty tough.
Well,
the Nationals, the Cubs, the D-backs, and the Cubs. Look at the Brewers' schedule: the Padres, the Pirates, the Reds, and the Rockies.
Yeah, that's a gravy schedule.
Like the Brewers have a very easy schedule. The Cards, they're going to get beat up down the stretch here. The Nationals are going to give them a tough time.
Yep.
The D-backs are a pesky team, and again, the Cubs, who, I mean, they're chasing them. That's going to be I could see the Cardinals having an epic collapse. It's probably not going to happen because I'm never right, but I would love to see the St. Louis Cardinals just crash.
Does this come down to the last day of the season?
I'd say second
last. It might.
The division second last? Wild card maybe last day?
Wild card will definitely come down to the last day. Let's talk about the wild card, shall we? The American League wild card, that second spot's getting interesting. Again, Oakland has the lead, and then Tampa and Cleveland basically neck and neck. Cleveland's half a game back of Tampa right now. Those are the three teams. Everyone else is basically done. Thank goodness Boston is out.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm asking you guys the same question. Hate to sound like a broken record here, but who's taking the American League?
Oakland and Tampa. And then Oakland's going to win the wild card game.
Gotcha. Patrick?
Man, last week you guys forecasted the Indians were going to get in, and I said that would suck ass because Tampa's obviously the more exciting team. But Tampa's lost two games in a row, and the Indians have won two games in a row, and now everything is all frigged up. And, like, I don't know exactly. I don't know what to think anymore, because like all the teams we don't want to win are fucking winning, and all the teams we want to lose are losing. So like, I don't know. The Diamondbacks won today. Oakland won today. And then obviously St. Louis won today. The Mets won today. So it's just like, this is just going to be a crazy finish to the season.
But the Rays schedule is so difficult coming down the stretch.
The Rays do have a tough schedule.
Dodgers, it's, Boston, Yankees, Jays. Well, they end with the Jays, so that's good for them.
But, I mean, the Athletics play everybody who's under 500. Mm-hmm. Some bad teams.
And, like, the Mariners are dump. The Angels are dump without Trout.
No Trout.
Like, and the Rangers aren't that good this year. Yeah, like, it's Oakland's to lose. If Oakland blows this.
Good news is we just hit our Mike Trout quota for the week. So
there we go.
Good.
Yay.
There we go. It was you this time. You snuck it in there.
Yay. But again, yeah, if Oakland blows this, like, the thing is, Oakland's really good at home. And if they get that home playoff game, if they can hold on, they get that home playoff game, they're great at home.
They are.
I can see Oakland winning it at home. I think whoever has the home advantage in the wild card in the American League is going to win. Usually it's home, whatever. You know, it's not a big deal in baseball.
Yeah.
But I think whoever has the home advantage there is going to win. When it comes to the National League, it's just as interesting. The Nationals have that 1.5 game lead over everyone. The Brewers and the Cubs are tied there. The Mets, Phillies, and I guess we'll count the Diamondbacks, but whatever. Do they have a chance of catching the Brewers or the Cubs?
I think the only team who's not in it that has a chance now might be the Mets. I know we both picked the Phillies and the Mets to get in, but I think the Phillies are done. The Mets just have that pitching staff. Stroman finally had a good game for them over the weekend.
But the Phillies have two games in hand against the Mets.
That is true.
So the Phillies have two games in hand, I think, against everybody.
Yeah. And the good thing for the Nats is that they play the Phillies, and then they also have one left against the Cardinals, too. So they have some – they can, if they can win some of those games, they'll gain ground on both of those teams. But at the flip side, if they lose those games, then it changes everything completely. Whereas the Mets don't play anybody who's in this race. So they're relying on, they don't control their own destiny here.
The Mets have to be perfect down the stretch.
They're relying on a lot of people. I think like I put in this thing here. I think it's going to take about 91 or 92 wins to get this NL wild card berth, which would mean that the Mets are going to have to win like 13 or 14 games.
I thought the Nationals were going to play a lot worse down the
impossible,
stretch. Yeah, so. I thought the Nationals were going to blow up, but they haven't.
Yeah,
I don't know why I thought that, but like I just had a feeling that this was the Nationals' year to kind of just have a really, really bad end of the season. But they're proving me wrong. They're playing great. Again, same question, Patrick. Who's taking the wild card?
The Brewers are kind of screwing everything up for us. I still think the Nationals are good to go. Again, they have that 5-game set against Phillies, which includes a doubleheader. It might come down to who wins those doubleheader games, because if it might be one of those situations where they're throwing everything they've got at the other team during that doubleheader. And then after that, the next day, they have another game. So, boy, it's going to be really intense. The Mets did get the win today, which means they're 3.5 back of the Cubs and Brewers. We'll see what happens to the Cubs and Brewers tonight. It's bottom of the first between Cincinnati and Chicago, 0-0. And the Brew Crew, it's 0-0 top of the third against San Diego. So, I don't know, man. Jesus Christ. It's the Diamondbacks. It's funny because, like, last week I said the Diamondbacks are going to do this, and then they just absolutely sunk their ship, and they're going to be toast by the weekend for sure. They're not mathematically out of it yet, but they're on the cusp of it. I wouldn't count out the Mets yet, but then again, I said that about the Diamondbacks last week, so I feel like they're going to be the next
whatever
team
you touch dies, Patrick Marsh.
Exactly. So I'm going to call it now. The Phillies are going to get screwed, and honestly, I think cream rises to the top. It's a Macho Man Randy Savage quote. Come on, you guys don't remember that?
It's also
that?
Just that's science, like so.
1980s wrestling? Oh, yeah, Macho Madness. The Cubs are the way better team than the Brewers. They're running on fumes. Yes, they've won 4 in a row, but look at their run differential. It's going to catch up with them, especially without Christian Yelich. Nationals, Cubs, wild card.
Yep.
Yep. All right, good talk. Who's hot, who's not? It is back because we got two guys who are actually hot for like the first time in 2 months. I don't think we've done who's hot, who's not in a long, long time.
Yeah, and we're not even doing not today. We're just going to go hot.
That's wild because, again, it has been the most depressing segment of this season. Like, it's just sad.
Before, when you have a 91 loss team, things before, are bound to yeah, get
before
depressing.
Before we recorded, be like, fuck, who's hot, who's not? God, there's a lot of knots. But Kevon Biggio, we got to give him a shout out.
Shoutouts, yeah. I mean, like Patrick mentioned before with our cycle talk, he hit for the cycle yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his last 30 games, he's hitting 260, 395 on base, 480 slugging percentage. That's a great OPS.
I mean, great.
He's stealing bases. He's a perfect 13 for 13 to start his major league career in stolen base attempts, which is, I think, was the most in Blue Jays franchise history when he hit 11. So good for him. And I mean, his on base percentage is amazing. He walks so much. So I mean, yeah, I gotta give props to this guy. I mean, we saw him struggle a little bit. He's never gonna be the Bo Bichette where he's gonna hit 300. He's gonna be that guy who sits in that 250, 260 range, but he's got pop, he's got speed, and he can get on base. So he's a great, like, probably a third or fourth cleanup hitter, I would say, in his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely turned the corner. Like, he's hitting 230, and he's got the OBP of 361. He's playing great. It just sucks when a prospect comes up and kills it, and then just does so bad afterwards. And you're like, okay, who's this? Who are you really? You know, it's hard to judge right at the start when you're mm-hmm. like, man, this guy's gonna be the next best thing for the Jays, and then it's like, oh boy, maybe not. You know, just find that consistency. And again, that he's a young baseball player. That's what's gonna happen to every young baseball player. But I think you hit the nail on the head. We're just going to get a consistent ball player.
Yep.
He's not going to blow anybody away. He's going to be like an Aaron Hill. He's going to be just a solid baseball player, which is what we need.
Yeah.
Because we got enough stars. We got Bichette. We got Vladdy. We got the star power. We just need solid baseball
and it's
players.
It's always nice to have that left-handed hitter with power, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lefty factor in there is pretty good. Kevon Biggio, you can gush about him all you want now, Patrick.
Actually, I want to throw back to you guys a question. Keith Law has been running his mouth on Twitter for some time now about Kevon Biggio. There's a lot of rumor and innuendo about him being overrated. And what is Keith Law, what is he seeing that we're not seeing or that we're in denial about that he would go so far as to just absolutely trash Kevon Biggio nonstop about his value, saying he's not worth a roster spot? Is this some kind of like secret conspiracy to get Kevon to go sign in Houston or something?
This might be bad. I've never heard of this Keith Law fella.
Well,
who is Keith Law?
I think he contributes for the Athletic.
He's obviously a bad baseball writer, but I mean, it's kind of blown my mind that, you know, if he can hit 230 and have a 361 OBP for the year, that's pretty darn good. 361 yeah. OBP, you want that guy on your roster.
Mm-hmm.
And had he played the entire season with us, he'd have 20 home runs and something very close to 20 bases stolen. That's a player that you want on your team. So I don't get why this guy is writing all this shit.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin's WRC plus is 112, so it's well above average. And I mean, he walks 16% of the time in the big leagues, which is what he did in the minors too. He walked a lot. He's going to strike out, but he's going to get those extra base hits too. Everything he does, I mean, looking at his stats right now, nothing jumps out as being statistically significantly like under or overperforming. It just looks like this is the type of ball player he is. He's going to hit in the mid 200 level, like somewhere between 230 and 260 for his career, and he'll walk a ton. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. That's 2019 baseball. You're going to strike out, you're going to take walks, and you're going to hit home runs. That's what we do now.
I'm just creeping this Keith Law guy's Twitter. First of all, seems like a huge douchebag.
I think he's a homer.
in his little bio there, joy removal machine. Fuck off. Like, ugh. Oh my God. Like, and I'm just looking at his tweets, too. He's a writer, and yet his grammar's horrible. He's using lowercase I's. He's not starting sentences with capital letters.
He's an old man on
Twitter.
If
you're going to be a writer and you have 475,000 followers on Twitter, get your grammar right. Like, set a good example, don't you? You either, and so again, some of his tweets, perfect grammar. Other ones, not perfect grammar.
It's part of a subculture on Twitter where if you decapitalize everything, you're supposed to read everything with a certain amount of, like, snark and sarcasm.
Well, I know the rules of Twitter. I'm on the Twitter.
The Twitter.
I know. I'm just saying, like,
the tweeter.
He's just, it's like he has to, he kind of has to pick a lane. Either he's going to be one of these smart asses or he's actually going to want to say stuff that matters. You got to pick a lane. You can't be both.
Yeah, he's trying to be that. All sarcastic guy, but also serious baseball guy. You can't do that. You ruin all your credibility by doing that.
We've already wasted way too much time talking about him and giving him a free, cheap plug on this podcast. So,
everyone go unfollow Keith Law if you follow him.
There you go. Do not follow him.
Oh, he's my new enemy, man. Oh, man, this guy on
it's
Twitter.
That guy you don't follow, but you just search him just every once in a while just to like make yourself angry.
Oh, and he's got a guitar video, too. Oh, he's got a video of himself playing guitar.
All right, this is a waste of time.
Mad.
Let's
mad.
Talk about Trent Thornton.
Yeah, Trent Thornton, the other guy we're featuring on the Who's Hot, Who's Not here. Patrick, gush over Trent Thornton for a bit.
Well, remember that time where Trent Thornton was having a terrible season and we were shitting all over him nonstop? Like the Pigeons used to do on the Winston Churchill statue here in downtown Halifax. Well, how you doing, Trent? He's been really good the last two outings. He's been following an opener. I'm pretty sure both times it was Wilmer Font, but I could be wrong.
Yesterday it was Ryan Tepera.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Tepera is alive? Oh, that's great. Fantastic.
You can tell somebody hasn't been watching Blue Jays baseball.
Well, I mean, is there a reason to anymore?
Yes.
Well, whatever. That's debatable. is it a coincidence that he's been unhittable since Clay Buchholz helped him with his curveball? I would say no. It's not a coincidence. He's striking out guys at a crazy pace while also limiting the walks. He's clearly tapped into some sort of secret power. Maybe he's kind of like the airbender, except now he's like the baseball pitch bender. I don't know.
Oh, jeez.
I'm sorry. I dug real deep for that
you
reference.
You need to apologize for that one, I think.
I'll never apologize for anything.
Oh, nothing, hey? You're one of those guys.
But Justin, what do you see in him right now based on his season's performance? He's been way better the last seven starts. Is there something here, or is he just a decent hand for now?
Yeah, so I didn't get to watch him last night. I caught the ninth inning when Kevin got his triple, but I missed the majority of the game. I was out for dinner. But I did watch his outing against Boston there last week when he went five hitless innings and he struck out seven Red Sox batters. Yeah, it was great. I mean, that curveball was looking really sharp, and it was really nice to hear that a guy in Clay Buchholz who has been having a terrible year with injuries and performance was able to help him out and give him some pointers. It kind of makes you almost want to re-sign Clay Buchholz just because he's obviously got some sort of value to this team. He's a veteran guy and he's helping the youngsters out. But yeah, like you mentioned, he's been able to limit his walks, which is really what was hurting him at the start of the year. He would go through some series and some segments where he was just completely unhittable. And then he'd go through a couple other starts in a row where he'd walk like five guys in like three innings and get the yank. So hopefully this is the new Trent. Maybe he has to follow an opener. I don't know. Like this opener strategy seems to be something there. I know Tepera gave up two runs last night, but he got through the order once. Got through six outs, right? Mm-hmm. And then you throw Thornton in for five innings, and then you're in the eighth inning. So,
well, I like it because it messes up the best batters in the lineup, mm-hmm. like the top three or maybe top four.
Well,
if they
get that
hit.
Reliever in there, right, who's not afraid to throw gas for two innings, because so, you know that's all he's got.
You throw that starter out for one inning, and then he pitches to the top of the order there.
Yeah,
and then the top of the order next time around, brand new pitcher, and they don't have time to get used to another pitcher, and then maybe the next time another brand new pitcher. Yeah. It's not a bad strategy.
The psychological aspect of it is definitely definitely merits some discussion. I think it's super smart. Credit to Tampa Bay for really pioneering that strategy when they had no starting pitchers last year.
Like,
when
I played ball, I would hate that. I would hate going up against, like, if I was on deck and then all of a sudden they brought in a new pitcher. I'm just like, I just spent five innings watching this guy pitch. I'm getting used to his stuff. I had two at-bats. Now they're going to change him up. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing getting into this at-bat. I mean, you obviously have a scouting report in your head, but you're still not used to seeing it.
Even as an umpire, I hate that, too, because, like you said, especially if a starting pitcher is rolling, and he just runs out of gas, and they got to bring this guy in, and they switch to a lefty or something, and it's just completely different.
Changes everything.
Yeah.
It's not that bad of a strategy. With that, we're going to put a bow on this episode of Bat Flips and Maple Dips. Thanks for listening, whether that be on Anchor or iTunes or Spotify or Google Podcast, TuneIn, Stitcher, wherever. We really appreciate it. Give us a follow on the socials, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that fun stuff, at BFMD Podcast. Ask us some questions. Give us some reviews. We'd like your feedback. Why not? For Justin, for Patrick, my name's Clayton. What is the goodbye song today, fellas? Who picked it?
I just picked it a few minutes ago. It is Marvin Gaye, one of my favorite singers. I'd say he's top three all time. This is Got to Give It Up. Beautiful song.
See you next week.